That's a great question. You know, I'm sure the rules are kind of the same here. The rule here is still, you know, we're not allowed to talk about tax savings because, you know, supposedly if all of us do the same tax return, we'd reach the same conclusion, which we know is nonsense. But certainly, I don't think there's any problem with communicating to your clients the tax savings that you save them. Any time that you can communicate value, it's a great thing. I mean, the better we get at that. And of course, one of the reasons people are hiring accountants is because they know that we're going to save them tax money. And maybe we should be able to communicate that to them, or at least point out that, hey, because we did this, we saved X. I always found that to be, you know, very relevant. I'm also looking at the chat screen here. Second customers only pay twice as your base cost. The point is to understand the difference between pricing and costing, but you still need costing. Yes, you might need costing, but here's the point. There's more than one way to do cost accounting. Timesheets are not needed to do cost accounting. You can do activity-based costing. Toyota does not have a cost accounting system. I can't repeat this enough for people that make this argument that we need timesheets for costing. Please study Johnson's book. Toyota does not do timesheets. They do not have a standard cost accounting system. This does not mean that they don't track costs. It means that they're using activity-based costing and marginal costing and other methods that don't rely on allocating average costs across a body of units. It is, and in a knowledge firm, if your value doesn't exceed your cost by a factor of 5 or 6, I'm not sure you should exist as a firm. We are not going to become better pricers by becoming more accurate cost accountants, folks. If that was the case, we'd be the best pricers in the world because we're the best cost accountants in the world. But cost accounting has nothing to do with value. For value, you have to look outside and look at the customer. I completely destroy this argument every single one of my books that we need timesheets for costing. It's a fallacy. It's not true. And it begs the question, if it is true, then explain these 500 firms that don't have them. No. No, not at all. The second client should be charged twice as much. And you know, here's the thing with this question, these types of questions. I'm not saying the cost isn't important, but project management takes that into account. All I'm saying is, look, you cost the project before you do it. So in effect, you're filling out your timesheet in advance. That's what project management makes you do. It makes you think about the cost before you start the job. This is why Toyota doesn't need a cost accounting system. Before Toyota even spends a nickel on building a car, they know what it's going to cost them, and they know what it's going to sell for, because it's the price that drives the cost. The cost does not drive the price. Value drives price, not cost. This is the biggest fallacy, and we absolutely destroyed this in the last webinar on value pricing. I went through the whole price-led costing chain and said that value determines price, not cost. And this is, I think, the problem with how we've been trained in accounting. We've been trained to think that cost drives price. It does not. Value drives price. And the only way to capture more price is to create more value and capture value, which means we have to understand value. Better cost accounting does not help us understand client value. I think we gravitate to it because it's easier and it's easily measured. You know, there's a saying in the wine industry, it's much easier to cost the bottles than it is to describe the wine. Costing the bottles and counting the bottles, that's easy. But describing the wine and putting a value on the wine, that's hard. And being more accurate accountants is not going to help us value the wine any better. Well, yeah, I'm all for Kaizen too. I mean, it's a huge part of Toyota's system. And Kaizen, of course, is just incremental improvement. And even Toyota's starting to realize that, you know, it's not just about getting a few percent better. You also have to make big innovative leaps and take big risks. And that doesn't come by just looking at Kaizen. That comes from, you know, developing the Prius and going out to the market with an incredibly risky product. But that said, again, we go back to this idea of KPIs for knowledge workers. Sure, I can measure how long a knowledge worker sits in an educational program. I can measure the hours they do every year in education. It tells me nothing about what they learned. I mean, this is one of the most frustrating things for me. I teach CPE for here in California and other states in the country, and all the accounting boards make us, you know, log the number of hours that your butt sits in the seat. But that tells me nothing about what you learned. What if I can make you learn something in 1 hour as opposed to 8 hours? Does that mean it was any less valuable? Again, it's this idea. We go back to these input measurements because they're simple. But in order to figure out what somebody learned, you have to look at the output and the result, which is much harder. So I think it's dubious to say that we need to have a knowledge worker track their time in order to figure out how effective they are. I think it's confusing efficiency with effectiveness. Again, my argument is very stark on this. I don't think you can measure the efficiency of a knowledge worker, but I do think you can judge their effectiveness. And I will take effectiveness over efficiency any day when it comes to knowledge work. Let me ask the group this. Would you rather have an efficient surgeon or an effective one? I guess to help communicate value. I think that's one way of looking at it. If you look at how McKinsey does this, McKinsey will go out to a client, and their first line before they even start an engagement is, "Look, we won't work with you unless we can prove that the value we deliver is at least 3 or 4 times of our price." Now that's a great opening line because that forces both parties into a conversation about value. It also means that McKinsey can not only look at cost savings as part of the value that they're going to bring, so I guess tax would be part of that cost saving, but they can also look at opportunities that they're helping the client go after. So they're also looking at revenue and potential revenue. They're also thinking, by the way, about the intellectual capital that they're transmitting to the company and the value of that in terms of an annuity, and that's got enormous value too. And this is why, by the way, McKinsey doesn't have timesheets and McKinsey doesn't do hourly billing. They do value pricing. Even Accenture now has 30% of its revenue under the aegis of value pricing arrangements with their clients. I hope that answered that. If not, email me. Craig, if there's more questions, I'm happy to take questions from people and run over. I mean, if there's more questions you've got, let's try and do some if you want. That's a great point. That's a fantastic point. No doubt, if a customer's contacting you and they just, you know, they're either complaining or they don't get it or whatever, but this is key. This is a great question. I've never had this question before. It's fantastic. I love it. How would you determine a positive versus a negative customer contact? That requires judgment. And what I love about this question is it leads to a KPI that requires judgment. You'd have to have somebody say at the end of a phone call or a meeting, boy, that client, you know, they just don't get it. They don't understand or they're not listening to us or whatever it is, for whatever reason, it's negative. But that requires a judgment, and that can't be measured. It's like, you know, you guys, if you had to measure my communication skills or my passion or my, my pride, you wouldn't be able to measure it. But I think you can all judge it, whether it's good or bad in your head, but you're making judgments about things. And I think one of the things that we're going to have to come to grips with now that we're in a knowledge economy is judgments are far more important than measurements. Why are we so scared of judgments? Is it because we're accountants and we think everything has to be objective? Is it because we're accountants and we rather be precisely wrong rather than approximately right? I mean, timesheets are precisely wrong. Sure, I can carry out somebody's billable hours to pi, but they tell me nothing about value. They tell me nothing about, you know, negative or positive customer contacts. They tell me nothing. But judgments allow me to be approximately right about the right things. And I will take that any day over being precisely wrong. I couldn't agree more. It's a great point. And it also might mean that firms should do a better job communicating what state of information they expect clients to submit their data. If they submit it to those guidelines, then this is the price. But by the way, if your data comes in and it's not, you know, it's not up to our standards agreed upon up front, there's going to be a change order and there could be an extra price because of that. That's a great point, Bob. So somebody I noticed wrote here, unfortunately, there are times when we need time records, for example, insolvency cases. Absolutely. Bankruptcy in this country, it's in the statutes that you have to price by the hour. Anything where a court may have jurisdiction over your price, is probably going to have to be billed based on time. And so if your firm does a significant amount of insolvency cases, absolutely keep timesheets. But again, that's a small percentage of the firms out there that do that type of work. So let's not let the dog wag, or you know, the tail wag the dog. And somebody also said, talk to Paul O'Byrne. He's got this figured out. Yes, Paul O'Byrne is our senior fellow at Verisage. His firm, O'Byrne & Kennedy, and they have many case studies up on our website. If you just type in either one of their names, you'll see all sorts of writings from these two guys about how they got rid of timesheets. They're proof right in your own backyard that these concepts work. I mean, you talk to either of those guys about what it's meant to their life to get rid of timesheets and what it's meant to their firm. They're bigger zealots than I am, so I'm warning you. If you think I'm a zealot about this, go talk to Mr. O'Byrne or go talk to Mr. Kennedy. I think you'll be blown away. Very little. I mean, I guess you can argue it's cost accounting, but I think the negatives here far outweigh it. And as I live longer on this planet, I believe those costs, hidden costs, the morale costs, the, you know, dividing my life into two spheres of billable and non-billable. I mean, look what's happening to the legal profession. Look what's happening to the accounting profession. One of the reasons people are exiting this profession is because leaders taught by this school of thought that we sell time are treating their people like they're factory workers or union employees, and they're not. They're knowledge workers. These people own the means of production. So I think in a knowledge economy, I'm almost ready to assert that timesheets have practically zero value. I guess there's some value somewhere, but boy, I think it's a stretch, especially if you're doing after-action reviews, before-action reviews, pricing up front, change orders. I mean, all of these things enhance intellectual capital rather than subtract from it like timesheets do. So my answer to that is no. Okay, folks, I went back to our website. If you go to verisage.com, if you click on Trailblazers, what you'll see there is a whole bunch of different firms from different professional knowledge sectors, IT firms, law firms, accounting firms from around the world that have made this transition. These are case studies that the people themselves have written, or we've kind of described the firm, and you can just flip through those Trailblazers, and you can even go into the archives by month. And you can see these firms that have done this. Read about their experiences. I know this is a lot to digest, but, I mean, these firms are out there. They're doing it. It's not just a theory. It's real world. I mean, I don't think there's anything more practical than a good theory. And I think timesheets are the wrong theory. I think the idea that we sell hours and our clients buy time, I think that's the wrong theory. And no matter how efficient we are at carrying it out, it's ineffective because it's the wrong theory. I think value pricing and no timesheets and KPIs, these are the right theories that at least help us develop better theories as we go. A lot of these firms are doing some amazing things with this, looking at different KPIs and just they're getting benefits from this that they didn't realize. And we didn't realize what happened when we got rid of timesheets. So there's tons of information up here. The community blog has tons of posts. Verisage is all free. We'll never spam you. And please take a look at it. There's tons of content under the resources section on how to do this, and just examples of firms that have done it. And I hope you take a look around the website. Also, if you went to People and you went to our senior fellows, this is where you'll be able to find there's 15 fellows in Verisage that work around the world. Two of them, of course, are Paul O'Byrne and Paul Kennedy in your country. And all their contact information, their bios up here, you can email these people. They're, again, I warn you, they're bigger zealots than I am, but you know, you don't have to listen to me. Take it from these guys. These are the future of the profession. These people are doing what people say can't be done. And you know, usually people who say something can't be done are being blown away by people already doing it. So I really want to thank you for listening to me for the last hour or so, and it's just been a delight. And please email me personally if you have any questions or if I didn't answer anybody's question to your satisfaction. Be happy to help you. People that email me know I'm fantastic with emails, as Paul O'Byrne likes to say, and I'll be glad to help you. We do this at Verisage just to help our colleagues succeed.